Hello, this is Peter Fillmore, and this topic today for our audio blog is going to be things about crossing the chasm related to companies that are trying to sell better into a new marketplace. Our guest today is Jeffrey Moore. Jeffrey is the author of Crossing the Chasm, Inside the Tornado, and several other very interesting and useful books. Today, we're going to be talking about crossing the chasm for small and medium businesses who have multiple offers and in many cases have an established mainstream product line, and they're trying to bring a new category, a new product into the marketplace. Hello, Jeffrey. Can you say a few words?
Hi, Peter. It's great to be here and great to be talking with you. Yeah, the topic we're going to talk about, Crossing the Chasm Inside an Established Enterprise, it's the focus of my latest book called Zone to Win. And so that'll what we talk about, I'm sure, will be relating to that.
Excellent. So let me kick it off with one sort of general question, Jeffrey, and then let you feed us your ideas in this. When an SMB has existing products and wants to add something new that's possibly a new category, what are your thoughts on the issues that they face and what guidance can you give to the senior management team?
This is kind of at the core, whether you're SMB or frankly a very large enterprise, you have the same set of issues. When you go into a new category, it takes some fairly deep investment at the front end. Sometimes we call it a J-curve, where basically the economic returns are going to be negative for a while, and then, you know, hopefully if this is a great success, they become very positive further downstream. And if you look at that financial intent, the venture capital system is set up completely to support that. So every startup essentially comes to the venture capital world with a J-curve, if you will, says fund my J-curve and we'll all become rich. When you're a small to medium business or even a large public company, there's no venture capital in your ecosystem, so you have to fund that out of your own earnings, out of your own income stream. And the challenge is you get to a point where there's just not enough resources to go around. And the behavior that we're all trying to correct for is watching company after company start into these things because they look like they're very promising opportunities, get halfway in, and realize that they're just really pinched, and then pull the plug on it because they just can't get all the way through. And that's actually the most destructive thing you can do to your company. You're much better off not even starting than doing that. But that, unfortunately, is the track record we've seen in a lot of high-tech companies, at least.
That's a fascinating situation, indeed. What about the human resource issues? I know you've got some ideas of solutions. There's things that happen related to human resources that may have built themselves into silos around the legacy business. And how do you come up with an alternate strategy to deal with that?
So the first thing you want to do is you want to honor, so what you realize is there's a conflict of interest inside the corporation, and it's a totally legitimate conflict. It's not like there's good guys and bad guys. There's a legitimate set of interests that says, look, we need to prosecute our established business. You can call it the legacy business, but it's funding everything we're doing around here. Let's hope it's not too legacy, right? They have need for resources. There's a bunch of cost centers that we have put in place that support our existing businesses, our finance group, our HR group, IT, marketing, customer support, supply chain, if it's a manufacturing world, all those kinds of things. They all still want resources to pursue the legacy business. There's growth opportunities there, or maybe they're competitive threats, or customers are being more demanding. They need resources. The new business, of course, is when the new business was really tiny, it needed resources, but it didn't need so much resource that it sort of broke the bank. But now when we're saying we're going to actually bring the new business to scale, now it does break the bank. And so the first thing we want to do is say, look, each of these four zones, we call them the performance zone, which is where you're making your money with your existing business, the productivity zone, which is all the various functions that support the performance zone doing your established business, the incubation zone, which is where you invent the new stuff, and then the transformation zone, which is when you actually decide to take this new business to scale. And when you look at the interests of those four zones, each one makes different demands. And the way it works and the solutions, because you were saying, Jeffrey, I hope you have some solutions for this. The solution when you're not transforming is well established, which is performance zone comes first, productivity zone comes second, incubation zone comes third. We'll fund in that order. We'll do another year of our existing business. But when you do a transformation and you start this J-curve, and because you don't want to go in and not come out, you have to make the transformation zone the number one priority for everybody in the company. Everybody has to align around. It doesn't mean everybody works on that business, but everybody has to put that business's interest ahead of anything else, because once you start into these transformations, you must get all the way through. By the way, once you get all the way through, there'll be enough extra cash flow in the system to make everybody happy. But it's a very painful journey, and you've got to get everybody on the boat. You can't have people rowing in opposite directions. So that has to be led by the CEO, and the CEO has to bring the entire company into that journey. So now we get back to the silos. So the silos are really, really efficient at pursuing the legacy business. From that point of view, you say, look, it's not that I'm trying to destroy the silos, but I'm going to have to underfund the silos. I have to take money from somewhere to fund the transformation. And a bunch of that money is going to come out of money that the silos thought was going to go to them. And this is why you have to get everybody on the same journey. You have to make that sacrifice in order to fund the transformation. And it's not just money. And it's not just even headcount. Often it's like, I need you to make I want you to stop doing what you would normally do and do something you would not normally do, because the new transformational business needs that from you, and it needs it right now. And you have to make that your priority. The last thing I'll just say here is, in the companies where this is successful, the CEO and the board have managed to create a compensation situation where every single executive in the company gets a significant amount of their discretionary compensation based on whether the transformation succeeds or not. So it's a way of trying to get everybody all into the same boat.
Absolutely. Great comments on transformation and the importance of executive attention. We still got 3 or 4 minutes, Jeffrey, and I've got one other question. In terms of skill sets, we sometimes see a problem, sometimes need new people, even in the environment of a very scarce resources. Sometimes need to find people who have both the personality and the aptitudes necessary to handle those responsibilities of productivity, the incubation, and then the transformation phase. So any thoughts about where a CEO and his team are going to find those people, whether they can be found internally, what you look for, and if you're hiring, what are some of the guidelines for trying to get the right people to do that new job?
It's really fun. It's fun. Let's use salespeople as an example, because you and I were talking earlier about salespeople. In the performance zone, you want the kind of salespeople who are good at making quota quarter after quarter after quarter. They're the people that go to sales club, their participation is 100% plus, that kind of stuff. And they're used to doing qualifying sales opportunities in a very clear way and pursuing them in a very direct and potentially aggressive way. And it's all goodness. In the incubation zone, and ultimately is when you take the incubation zone to the transformation zone, it's a much more inefficient sales motion. The category is new. Your presence is new. The ecosystem of partners doesn't quite know you yet. The customers are excited by whatever it is that you've got that makes you novel, that you're excited about. But they're also a little bit skeptical about your viability, given that you don't have the track record you do in the old one. So the salesperson who's used to selling in the performance zone hates selling in the incubation zone because all the things that they rely on aren't there. On the other hand, there's another kind of salesperson that just loves the challenge of doing this. They love the excitement of the new product. They love having to go to various people inside the corporation, build a budget, create a budget. You know, in the performance zone, you're always qualifying for a budget. Well, in the incubation zone, you have to create a budget. There usually isn't a budget to start with. So it's a very different sales motion, much more creative, but it doesn't scale particularly well. And so you have two different kinds of people there. You can find, I would say, in general, in an established corporation, that second type of salesperson may come in through an acquisition. Like if you buy a startup, that the sales force in that startup very much probably has that profile. If they don't, then you want to go out and hire. And by the way, the way you find those people is startups come in and out of business very frequently. And either they got sold or whether they went public or whatever, they're always spinning off salespeople who want to do the next cool thing. That's who you'd be looking for.
Excellent comments and guidance on that. So one of the other things that comes to mind is the market strategy. And I know you've done a ton of work on this, and there's great ideas in all of your books on that. I've still seen in my own work that it's often difficult for a company to update their market strategy and or to carry forward two different market strategies, one for the established breadwinning product and the other for the product that's going to be the future of the company. Any thoughts on how to keep your head straight on as a management team, and also perhaps keep some of the people that are managing strategy A while others are managing strategy B and perhaps tapping some of the same shared resources?
One of the things you realize just based on the conflict that you've teed up sharing resources between those two zones is very, very challenging, and it's something you want to minimize as much as possible. What we advocate is in the incubation zone, you set up a model that looks a lot like a venture capital startup model, where you have the business is a general, there's a general manager of the new business. They have sales resources reporting directly to them. They have engineering resources, professional services, marketing. They have a tiny team, but it's a complete tiny team, and it's autonomous and independent from the established business in the performance zone, because the cadences of these two businesses are radically different. There's a whole lot of reasons to keep them separate. As long as the incubation zone business is relatively small, you can kind of have the separation and people are fine. When you go to scale the incubation zone business, now you're essentially coming back to your established line of business and the salespeople and the marketing people and the whole go-to-market envelope and saying, we need to now absorb this new business into our legacy fabric, and it's going to be very disruptive because in the short term, things are not going to work in a perfect way, and we just have to drive through this. And that's why the CEO and with the head of sales, with the head of marketing, with all the heads, have to say, okay, we are going to make this a priority. We're going to get through this. But it's a very difficult priority, and we should never assume that those two interests are going to get along easily, because they just have very, very different core rhythms.
Jeffrey, that's a great comment. So in a nutshell, that separate tiny team for the incubation phase is really critical, and thank you for clarifying that for us. At this point, we're pretty much out of time, and I think our audience has got a lot of great ideas from you to mull over and contemplate, and maybe tune their particular approach when they're back at their offices. So thanks again, Jeffrey. Let's wrap it up for today.
It's my pleasure. That, Peter, if I could just put one plug in. These ideas all are in a very short book called Zone to Win, Organizing to Compete in an Age of Disruption. It's exactly for this audience and exactly for this problem. So I would encourage people to check it out on Amazon and see if that helps them.
That is a great idea. I'll encourage all our readers to get out, get a copy of the book, purchase the book, buy it from Amazon or any of their preferred e-commerce distributors. And I really appreciate your participation today, Jeffrey. Bye for now.
Terrific. My pleasure.